But let's first talk about the cost. So we have quite a big problem because our grid fees are really high. It's not getting a grid connection, but it's the operational grid fees. And because of these huge grid reinforcements, these tariffs have been increasing. The tariffs on a TSO level have increased by a factor of 4 over the last year. So
They're 4 times higher than they were a year ago.
Pretty much how much you can make with a battery, right? On an annual basis. And it's about the same as this number. Try make up this huge amount with revenues. It's almost impossible. It's almost impossible.
We talked a lot about grid scale batteries on their own, standalone. What about co-location in the Netherlands? Because you've got all this solar, right? And is there any subsidy mechanism?
If you combine your battery with a generating asset, you can avoid these high costs. And that makes the business case for co-located projects for wind energy really interesting. There's no subsidy, Quentin.
Hello and welcome back to Transmission. In this episode, Ren Savanaya, business lead of system integrations at Ventolines, joins Quentin to discuss the power system and battery energy storage in the Netherlands. Over the conversation, they explore the high grid congestion and grid costs facing the system, the opportunity for co-location of storage, and much more. If you're enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode, and give us a rating wherever you listen. Let's jump in.
Ventolines or Ventolines, which one should we start with?
Ventolines.
Ventolines. Okay, so what does that mean?
It's actually a wind. Like you have in France, you have like the Mistral, and so Ventolines is also a wind. And originally, we've mostly been working in wind energy projects. So yeah, that's where the name is coming from.
So Rens, I want to say a massive thank you for joining us on the podcast. We've got quite a lot to cover today. If you're listening, this episode is going to be a bit like the Lars Stefan episode, where we went deep into Germany. But this time, we're going to go deep into the Netherlands and talk all things power systems in the Netherlands, and especially grid-scale storage. So, and we've got Rens on from Ventolines, who really knows this market. So it's going to be a fun one. Rens, do you just want to introduce yourself and talk a little bit about the company?
So yes, my name is Rens Savanaya. I work for Ventolines. We are an advisor to large renewable energy projects, so wind energy, solar energy, batteries, preferably combined. And we advise throughout all phases of a project, so early permitting, grid connection, contracting, financing, construction, even asset management. So we pretty much help investors and developers throughout these projects.
And what do you do there?
So I have a pretty commercial role. So I pretty much make sure we have the work so that we get the orders. And then I select a team together with, the entire heads of department, and we do the project. But I'm in the early stage of projects, talking to clients, making sure they want to work with us. But before, this is now I have a commercial role, but before I was an engineer, I was a researcher, I was a project leader of some of these large projects myself. And only for the last few years, I've taken up this more of a commercial role.
And Ventolines, do you operate, you're in the Netherlands right now, but do you operate just in the Netherlands or do you cover the rest of Europe?
So our base is the Netherlands. We've now, actually, it's nice to say, it's a family company. There's about 100 people here. And most of our work is in the Netherlands, but we definitely work abroad. We've done some really cool projects in the US and Australia, but also in other European countries. But the Netherlands is where we do the majority of our work.
And I'm so excited to do this conversation because this is the first time we've gone deep on the Dutch market on this podcast. And there's so much to cover. Could you just talk for a second about your involvement or Ventolines' involvement in battery energy storage? And then why does battery energy storage matter for the Dutch energy transition? Mm.
So at Ventolines, we are now working for a huge number of battery projects. I think I counted recently, it's about almost 30 projects, and they range between 5 megawatt to 500 megawatt. And they're battery projects co-located with wind energy, solar, power plants, and of course, grid-scale standalone batteries. We can talk about that later more. And why is this really ramping up in the Netherlands right now, at least the pipeline is that we have this year, we have 50% of our electricity generation is from renewables. And we have seen a huge growth in solar over the last few years, and also wind energy, we've been steadily increasing. So yeah, and with renewables, as you know, you need storage. So that's, yeah. And also we are, our grid is hugely congested. So battery storage, of course, have an important role there as well to play. Yeah.
And let's start really zoomed out and then zoom in. So the Dutch, let's start with the Dutch economy. Okay. Which parts of the Dutch economy are using power, and especially a lot of power? Is it manufacturing? Is it process heat? Is there a big, you know, how much domestic is there? Is there a lot of electric vehicles? What does the load side of the Dutch power market look like?
I think that's not very different than any other European country. It's of course, just general households, company, data centers, larger industry. But maybe it's good to mention that still only about a small fraction of our energy is still electrified. So the largest part is still gas. But in terms of electricity, is, I think, not very different from any other European countries.
And when we did the episode with Lars a few weeks ago, it's funny, he said that the European electricity grid, or the power grid, is the biggest machine on the planet, or something to that. And it's funny, like, it's just a lovely phrase.
It's all connected, right? Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, there's quite a lot of chatter on the YouTube comments and various other places about whether that was true or not, which was quite interesting. But how is the Dutch power grid interconnected with the rest of Europe?
So the Netherlands has strong interconnections. So with the UK, Denmark, Norway, and of course Belgium and Germany. So there's interconnections, and also the Dutch TSO TenneT, they have plans to expand this connection. And I fully agree with Lars that one of the priorities of this energy transition is a strong European grid, and grid reinforcements inside countries on every voltage level, medium to high voltage, is crucial, but then also the interconnection. So yeah, we're pretty much connected to all the countries surrounding us.
What is the size of the demand in the Netherlands? How does it compare to Germany or the UK or the Nordics? What's I'm going to put you on the spot here. What's peak demand?
Yeah, I think of course it varies, but I think the highest peak is about 17 gigawatt, so in that order, and it ranges typically on a normal day somewhere between, I think, something 7 and 15 gigawatt. That's our peak demand. And of course, compared to Germany, that's very small, but we're a much smaller country. But maybe what is also interesting to say is what's, you know, the Dutch energy mix and how that relates to our peak demand. Because I just mentioned the huge increase in solar, right? So in only 6 years, we increased from 4 gigawatt solar to 24 gigawatt. So that's 20 gigawatt of solar in 6 years. So every year, that's 4 gigawatt added.
Wow.
And that's just, I mean, that's just a revolution, right? That's just insane. And that has, of course, huge impact on grid and on our energy mix. And yeah, that's just a big change. And then originally in our energy mix, there's quite a lot of gas and coal. We have a little bit of nuclear, and then some waste power plants, some smaller generators, but it's mostly gas, coal, and then nuclear. And then, of course, now this 24 gigawatt solar and another 11 gigawatt wind.
Yeah. Is that onshore wind?
Both. So I think the majority of our wind generation is still onshore, but now the growth for offshore wind in the Netherlands is huge. So now, like I said, we have now 11 gigawatt of wind total. There will be another 10 gigawatt added offshore over the next 7 years. So I think they have plans to reach 21 gigawatt in 2030. So there's a lot of offshore wind going to join the energy mix. Yeah.
And so to, if I've got this correct, so to summarize, roughly 15 to 20 gigs of peak demand to size it as a you know, a power grid and power demand. And then a real mix of generation types in there, but huge astronomical growth really in solar and lots more wind to come. Highly interconnected too. Okay, so we've got an idea about the Dutch power sector. Let's talk a little bit about batteries then. So can you give an overview before we get started of the existing grid scale battery energy storage projects in the Netherlands? Have we got tens of megawatts, hundreds of megawatts, gigawatts? What does the world look like for batteries in the Netherlands right now?
So it's a bit a contradiction because battery projects are booming in the Netherlands, but we don't have so many batteries operational yet. So over the last few years, we've grown up to about 250 megawatt of batteries. And those are batteries ranging between in size, somewhere between 5 to 30 megawatt. Those are currently operational. And they are standalone batteries on medium voltage or DSO level. And then a lot of batteries with co-located, either with wind, with solar, with power plants, maybe. And it adds up until with 250 megawatt, about, more or less. I recently posted something on LinkedIn, which shows like all the projects in the Netherlands on the Dutch map, which shows all the operational projects, but also the ones that are in construction and soon to be permitted or permitted. So that's the current situation. Why I said it's booming, because maybe just to drop a number, at the TSO, so which is the high voltage grid operator, TenneT, they have now 70 gigawatt of battery projects on their waiting list or in progress of being connected, 70 gigawatt. So that's enormous. And nobody's saying that all those projects will be realized. It just shows the huge interest and willingness of developers and investors to be part of this transition. So that's just mind-blowing.
That probably leads us on to a question about where in the Netherlands batteries are best placed to be. So the market for power let's talk about the pricing. So are prices national or local in the Netherlands?
They're national.
They're national. Yeah. And is there a economic or even a system benefit to have batteries in certain places? And how is that being considered or managed?
So no, we have one bit zone. So we have the batteries that are currently being developed or are operational. The first ones, so a couple of years ago, they were mostly working for maintaining the grid frequency. So FCR, frequency containment reserve. Those were typically 1C batteries. So they were like 10 megawatt hour batteries. Now you see that these batteries that are being built, they are towards a half C or even a quarter C. And they are moving towards ancillary services for the TSO, for the imbalance market or the AFRR. And that is currently the imbalance market is the dominant market currently. And then there's like Lars explained last time also, it's about day ahead and intraday. So you see a shift from 1C batteries to half C, quarter C, and they're moving to different kind of revenue streams.
And you guys have got, there's an enormous congestion problem, isn't there, in the Netherlands?
Yeah.
I mean, you guys, there's this phrase that the Dutch grid is the most reliable in the world or something like that.
At least that's what we try to claim, right?
I mean, I don't know how you measure that. I mean, I'm on board with it.
But I think that's something the Dutch like to say, but I mean, it's true that our grid is extremely reliable and we have very high standards. I mean, but so do most European countries. It's just crucial to have a vital economy, right? But so yes, it's indeed, that's something we like to say. But also, I think we were one of the first countries that really was exposed to grid congestions. So that grid congestion, and that started out already, I think, 4 years ago. We have these maps that we like to update, and it shows like these red areas where you cannot have any grid capacity, either for offtake or feeding in. And currently, if you look at the Dutch map, it's red. Like there's hardly any place in the Netherlands left where you can get grid capacity. So it's a huge problem.
But what about all this offshore wind, right? So yeah. So this offshore wind, the Dutch offshore wind in the North Sea is going to be really expensive, right?
Yeah.
Because of the, well, I'll let you talk about that. Why is offshore wind in the North Sea for the Netherlands going to be so expensive? And then what does this do to connection queues and priorities across the grid? Because really you need to get that power from the sea on the west over True. To continental Europe. So how are you guys thinking about that problem?
So there's two aspects of this. So first of all, there's the enormous impact on grid costs. So we are building, as we like to call it, the powerhouse of Europe, and not just the Netherlands, but also Denmark and the UK. And there's all these huge wind farms being built in the offshore in the North Sea. All that power needs to go towards land, but then also towards all these cities and industrial zones. But let's first talk about the cost. So we have quite a big problem because our grid fees are really high, especially over the last 4 years.
Do you mean as in the tariffs to the consumer?
Exactly. Yeah, that's good to clarify. So it's not getting a grid connection, but it's the operational grid fees. And in the Netherlands and most European countries, the off-taker pays for all the grid costs. And because of these huge grid reinforcements, these tariffs have been increasing. And especially also in 2022 and 23, when gas prices or energy prices were so high, the TSO, they had to buy, they had spent also a lot of money on paying for all the grid losses and the imbalance. So the tariffs on a TSO level have increased by a factor 4 over the last year. So,
as in, sorry, they're 4 times higher than they were a year ago.
Yeah, yeah. So it's for the TSO, so for TenneT, so 4 times. So imagine if you were developing a standalone battery, and one of your highest operational costs is grid fees, and in 4 years that number, which is already a large part of your operational cost, if it doesn't multiply, it goes, you know, up by a factor 4. And that's now. So currently, I looked it up, the what you pay annually is about 200k euro per megawatt. So I think, Quentin, you know pretty much how much you can make with a battery, right, on an annual basis. And it's about the same as this number. So try make up this huge amount with revenues. It's almost impossible. It's almost impossible for these standalone batteries. So, and that's just not for the batteries only. It's industry, it's electrolyzers, it's, you know, anybody who's using electricity at high voltage level, they're having huge trouble with these high grid tariffs.
Just a footnote here is we're actually going to put a link in the show notes to a LinkedIn post that you did about grid fees that's well worth a look on this. But essentially the business case is turned upside down by these fees, right?
Yes. And if you would calculate the business case of standalone battery 4 years ago, I think you'll be doing fine. But now it's becoming more and more challenging for standalone batteries. Our neighbors like Belgium and Germany, they have these grid fee exemptions. So actually batteries for quite a long period of time, they don't pay any of these fees that we are. So there's a trend that, you know, of course, investors and developers, they are moving abroad. And because, yeah, if you look at the case for a standalone battery in Belgium or Germany or Netherlands, then if you're a large European or worldwide investor, then you go to these countries. So, and this is a real, like, big national debate, not just about batteries, but how are we going to deal with this huge cost of grid reinforcement, and especially the cost for this infrastructure offshore, and who's going to pay for that? And it's, yeah, that's one of the debates that's currently ongoing. And last week, there was an announcement done by our regulator that they're now seriously looking into tariffs for generators. So generating assets, so actually wind farms, gas power plants, and solar farms, they're actually also going to contribute to these tariffs. And that immediately leads to a huge debate, of course, because, you know, if you're a wind farm and you're not paying anything now, then it undermines your business case. So it's, yeah, exciting.
Something that doesn't really get talked about much is on a macro scale within Europe, which, because Europe is so highly interconnected, there is an opportunity for particularly coastal states with a lot of offshore wind capacity potential to be, as you say, the powerhouse of Europe, and the southern states to, or southern countries, sorry, I've been in the US too long, southern countries with huge solar potential also being a powerhouse of Europe. And it's all to play for, but when it's not a level playing field on infrastructure and tariffs, that makes it more challenging.
What is a bit unfair is that if countries around the North Sea, but also the southern European countries, generate huge amount of solar, then these countries, they pay for these huge investments. But if you...
Do you mean infrastructure? Or do you mean like grid?
They have to pay grid infrastructure. Grid. Yeah. Yes, I mean the infrastructure. But if the Netherlands exports electricity to Belgium, then it's not like the Belgian people are all of a sudden paying for these infrastructure. It's still, and this is also one of the ideas that and this is a big European reform, that somehow that whenever you net import electricity, you should also contribute to these investment costs through tariffs. But this means like all European countries need to collaborate, and some countries, they are hardly paying anything. So I think it's going to be quite a debate. But it's maybe good to emphasize that although we tend to complain here that other countries surrounding us have a good, you know, have these exemptions and we don't. The Dutch TSOs, together with the DSO and the TSO and the regulator, they actually have come up with quite an innovative system, which is worth diving into. So we don't have these exemptions, but there are ways to reduce these tariffs for batteries. And it's quite unique. So maybe it's interesting to dive into to
Let's
that
do
topic.
It. Let's yeah. do it. Yeah, yeah.
How you can still make this business case work. So what they came up with is two things that are worth mentioning. So first one is like dynamic tariffs. So from this year, the tariffs are not flat, but depending on the season and the hour of the day, you have a different tariff.
Just to be specific here, so we're talking about batteries connected to the grid in the Netherlands, and which tariffs are we talking about? Connection tariffs?
It's if you offtake electricity of the grid, you pay for the operational use of the grid
use
connection.
Use of system tariffs.
So it's, yeah. How do you call it?
We call it, yeah, so they're use of system. In the UK, it's use of system tariffs, UOS. There's a DUOS and a TANUOS and a also a good DUOS and a whatever.
It's operational costs that you pay on a monthly basis. You pay the grid operator for the contracted capacity, but also how much you actually use, only off-takers pay. So they call it dynamic tariffs or variable tariffs that they try to incentivize you to use electricity when there's a lot of solar or in certain seasons. So it's, which is, I think, a great thing. We should, all of us should become more familiar with using electricity when it's generated. And we're so spoiled in a way that we have always just been using electricity whenever we wanted at any time. But I think that's really going to change in our new energy system. And this tariff structure is stimulating you to use electricity at the right time, and therefore you get some like a discount on your tariff. So that's one. And the second one is that you get a huge discount on your tariff if for 15% of the time, so 1/5, 90% of the time, the grid operator can shut you down. So they can say 15% of the time, right now, you don't have access to the grid. And
up
in return,
to 15, I assume.
They can pretty much say a day ahead. So tomorrow you don't have access, but then you get about 50%. So that's 50% of the time. Sorry, 50%, 50% discount on your tariff. So if you combine these two, so the variable tariffs and this discount in return for downtime, it leads to about 75% reduction of these transport costs.
So let me get this right. So the grid is saying to battery owner X, look, if up to 15% of the time I can switch you off, I want to give you a 50% reduction in all of your other connection tariffs.
Yes.
That's pretty well. It depends when, though, right? So I assume they want to switch you off when the system's congested. And is that when it's peak demand? And is that when prices are high? And that's exactly the time that you want to be online.
Yeah. And for this, I mean, this is exactly the right question. So if that 15% of the time is exactly the time where this battery is making money, right? Or is it actually the time that, you know, batteries probably wouldn't be doing anything anyhow? And that piece of the puzzle, we're still trying to figure out to get also, but we need a lot of input also from the TSO. And right now I'm in the middle of the process, and also my colleagues are in the process of understanding that better and getting a clearer answer of TenneT, the TSO, when, what is the likelihood that that will happen and when? And it's still a bit uncertain.
So that's the, is this ATR 85?
It is. It's actually the alternative transport rights. So you get like, it's a new kind of contract, and the 85 stands for 85% uptime. Yeah, that's it. So everybody's talking about that in the Netherlands.
And when do we can you get that right now? The 85%.
I think it will, you can sign it already now. You can sign this contract now. I think it can only be really implemented in somewhere next year.
We talked a lot about grid scale batteries on their own, standalone. What about co-location in the Netherlands? Because you've got all this solar, right? And is there any subsidy mechanism or any regulatory benefit of being co-located? What's the deal with co-location?
These tariffs, they're so high, like I said, so standalone batteries, they are trying to find a way to get their business case work and reach financial close at high voltage for super large batteries. But if you combine your battery with a generating asset like wind and solar, or even a power plant, or maybe a large consumer like a data center, you can avoid these high costs by behind the meter charging, and directly charge behind the meter from your generator, and that makes the business case for co-located projects for wind energy really interesting. So we are working on a lot of co-located batteries with wind. There's no subsidy, Quinton. We don't have any subsidy, no CapEx subsidy, no operational subsidy, nothing. The only thing that the government has been talking about is giving a subsidy for batteries with solar. But that's still very unclear. So the rules of this subsidy, it's still, we're waiting for it. So, but that's the only subsidy that regarding larger batteries that the government has been talking about.
And what about other stuff? Like, let's just run through all of the hot potatoes. So capacity market, does the Netherlands have a capacity market?
No, and quite recently, Lars explained that Germany, they decided they're going to implement a capacity market. Our previous minister decided after consultation not to implement a capacity market. It doesn't look like it's going to happen soon here. And I think the Dutch gas power plants in the Netherlands, in 10 years from now, they would love to have a capacity mechanism, because more and more of the time they're just standby, right? They have less and less time to generate revenues. And on the other hand, they're still going to be quite crucial for some time for our economy. So you already notice now in the Netherlands that the owners of these large gas power plants, they are starting the debate about, you know, that their business model is ending. And I can imagine at some point that's also going to be quite costly, because we do need them still for some time. And then who's going to pay for that, just to keep them on standby? And maybe it's not a capacity market, but at least some kind of capacity, like compensation or mechanism that allows them to run a viable business case.
Yeah, I mean, in the UK, so the T-1, so the 1 year ahead capacity market, I think has been really successful. Because what it ended up doing was keeping thermal units online throughout winters where they wouldn't have done otherwise, and we really needed them.
Yeah.
But then the long-term contracts, we ended up, what we wanted in the UK, but no one would say out loud, is we wanted new CCGTs. And it's like, it was a dirty thing to say out loud. You weren't allowed to actually say that, but we really need some efficient CCGTs. And it never really happened. But hey ho, that's me complaining about capacity market done.
So maybe it's nice to mention now that actually we don't have any plans for new coal. Of course, we're phasing out coal, I think, towards 2030. There's no plans for new gas, but the government wants 2 to 4 new nuclear power plants. So this is really interesting.
Good for them. Rightly so.
Yeah, you're in favor of having more nuclear.
I'm a massive fan. No, I'm a huge fan of nuclear. Yeah, yeah.
I think it will be, you know, in a way, it will be very good for the volatility of our market. So batteries will only profit, but society won't. I mean, it's extremely costly, and it's going to take way much time. Nobody's talking about nuclear waste anymore. So, yeah, it's fascinating.
Let's go back to batteries. So there's no real subsidies. There's no capacity market.
No.
You guys have got frequency response markets, but the reserve and frequency response markets are not particularly deep, right? So how does the business case look for batteries beyond, well, right now with ancillary services and beyond?
Yeah. So like I said also already in the beginning, so FCR is saturated. It's only about 100 megawatt, a bit more. So people are looking into other ancillary services. So AFRR, imbalance market, and then, you know, energy trading day ahead, intraday. So, and that obviously you need, as I said, deeper batteries. So 2 hours, 4 hours batteries. The forecasts are always interesting. So of course, how much money you think you're going to make on these markets. And it's just then, there's, of course, experts trying to give a forecast on what the future will bring. And it's like a glass bowl that you look in and try to convince everybody that that's going to happen. But you don't have any subsidy backing you up. So it's quite a high risk investment.
So if there's no capacity market, then how is supply being guaranteed? If I was going to play the devil's advocate, right? How is TenneT confident that you're going to have the capacity to get through the winters?
So now mostly they rely on gas. I think for quite some time they will rely on the gas power plants. And then whenever the sun is going down and there's less wind, then the gas power plants ramp up. And then there's Lars's a European machine that interconnection using hydro, wind from other countries, nuclear from France. It's just Europe. We should all be connected and bring power, shift power through Europe. And I find it very fascinating to look at the wind profiles of European countries. Actually, Wind Europe, they just now, I really like it. They announced, like, have a dashboard where you can see the generation mix of each country every day. And I try to look at it every day. And what's fascinating is about wind. It's always windy somewhere. So if you have
it's always 5 o'clock somewhere.
That too. Yeah. So it's just great that if this European grid is getting stronger and stronger, then you can actually really shift load profiles from one country to the other.
And let's just to finish off before we go to the last two questions. to come back, we talked about a lot of stuff today, but if we're going to kind of wrap up into where are the opportunities for investment in storage in the Netherlands, we've got this mixed message, which is 70 gigs of batteries in the connection queue, but a country with 15 to 20 gigs of peak demand, a ton more offshore wind coming in, highly constrained grid, particularly getting power from the West to the rest of Europe. So if you're an investor looking at this market, thinking we need to deploy some capital into some into the right assets, how do you think about answering that question?
I would definitely go for co-location first. So I'm a big fan of sharing a grid connection. So you mentioned trying to transport all these the power from offshore wind towards these industrial zones is just crazy expensive. We should bring consumption and production together. So I believe that these hybrid energy parks of wind and solar and storage combined in one grid connection, that that's the best investment. And it's also, because of these high grid fees, best investment for placing batteries. Now, there's not enough co-located assets to, I think, grow towards the amount of gigawatts we're going to need for batteries. So standalone batteries are going to be needed. And I'm confident that we will get there. But if I would, you know, invest my money, it would be on combining a battery with a wind and solar farm.
All right. You heard it here first. Now let's get to, okay, this is your chance. If there's anything you want to plug or talk about, any news, any services, now's the time, Rens.
No, I don't want to get commercial. I think what I want to share is that, you know, just be excited. You know, this I've been working in this field now for about 16 years, and I started out as a young engineer and as a researcher, and all we were trying to do is, you know, make this technology viable, make it better, make it, you know, more cost efficient, scale up. And for a long time, we weren't so sure that, you know, it was actually going to happen. And now for these last few years, if you see the exponential growth of solar and wind and batteries, it's just amazing. So I think what I want to plug is that, you know, if you're just out of school and you start working, you know, this is, you're lucky. I mean, these are the exciting times. We're actually doing the energy transition these days. And it's just an actually amazing time to work in the field of renewables.
So the thing you want to plug is basically just good vibes.
Good vibes. I mean, it's really, yeah, good vibes. I mean, and if you look at, you know, the figures of growth of wind and solar and batteries, it's just amazing. And yeah, just be happy about that. And it's not going to end. There's no way back. I mean, there's just no way back. It's just going to continue to grow.
Well, yeah, I don't know whether you've met Neil from our team. He was one of our first employees and he runs our research now. But when he chose his own job description when he joined the company and he wanted to be the vibe curator. So Rens, you're the vibe curator for us. And now my favorite question actually is, what's your contrarian view? So what's the thing that, there's a dog walking past behind me. There's people, I don't know what's going on, but if you're watching this, then hopefully it's entertaining. So, Rens, now to my final question, which is my favorite. What is your contrarian view? So what do you believe that most other people don't?
I love this question. It's really nice. It really makes you think. So what I'm going to say is maybe not that contrarian, but I think it's good to repeat it. And maybe I'm in a certain, you know, bubble of people who believe in this as well, but I think it's worth mentioning. What I believe is that we can truly power the world just through renewables and storage. So I think there's a lot of debate about that going on, where that's actually possible. But I truly believe that, you know, this is feasible. And I'm all about electrification. You know, everything should be electrified as much as we can. If it's mobility, I mean, it's just insane what you're seeing now with cars and trucks and heavy machines and even aviation. And ferries, it's just, so electrification, heat, electrify it, heat pumps, e-boilers, I think up to quite high degrees. And then let's try this first make this energy transition that we are maybe 90% on renewables. And then the remaining 10% part, which I believe is a lot of attention is going towards it, like hydrogen, nuclear, sorry, Quentin, but also—
Hold on. You can't put nuclear in the same bucket as
hydrogen.
As most hydrogen projects.
Most hydrogen projects, but also carbon capture. I think we're spending, at least like policymakers are spending too much time on stuff that, of course, it's important, but let's focus.
Did you see what just happened in the UK, by the way? Mm-hmm. We just announced 22 billion quid for, well, firstly, the new government came in, announced that the previous government had left a financial black hole of about 22 billion quid. And then within weeks, announced they were going to give 22 billion quid worth of subsidies to a load of projects, but primarily, yes. And it's just, firstly, that's politically very silly to do. Secondly, yeah. It's just not a good, it just, there's so many things wrong with it. There's so many better ways to spend 22 billion quid.
Yeah. And that I think maybe is the last point I want to make, which is maybe a bit contrarian, but what really strikes me is that there's like a mismatch between what's actual in actual investment, what's actually going on, like wind, solar, batteries, e-boilers, heat pumps, EVs, and policy. Like, it seems like policymakers, there's a mismatch between policy and which actually is happening. And on the one hand, I find it very annoying that there's, if you count the number of times that the word hydrogen is being mentioned in the European document and the amount of time that battery is being mentioned, it's just insane. But on the other hand, there's like this, and I'm going to be excited because there's like this undercurrent of people who actually know what they're doing and investors who actually know where to spend their money on. And that's just continuing. And policies change. They come and go. It varies a bit. But the undercurrent is so strong that this change is just going forwards and yeah, there's no way back. But what if policy, which is still very important, what if it would be actually in line what is really going on, what investments are actually being done right now? I think then what's the word after exponential? I don't know, but it's just going to be. So I find that very fascinating.
Awesome. Well, you brought the vibes today, Renz, so thank you very much.
You're most welcome.
I want to say a huge thanks for joining us on the podcast. Today, we've covered most things about the Netherlands power market, but there's a load more to uncover. So hopefully we'll have you on again when the market has grown a little bit and we can talk about the success of the market and some of the outcomes of these things. I really like ATR 85. That sounds like a cool way of running a grid to me. Essentially, you're buying a sort of an option on your connection, which is nice. But yeah, thanks for joining us. And we're going to put in the show notes a load of LinkedIn posts. So if you're listening to this and you want to find out more about Renz, definitely follow him on LinkedIn, check out Ventolinas, and check out these three particular posts. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Quentin.
Thank you for listening to Transmission, a Modo Energy podcast. Transmission delivers conversations from industry leaders and experts exploring energy markets and the operations and technologies related to grid-scale battery energy storage. Check out our other episodes by searching Transmission wherever you get your podcasts. Check out the Energy Academy, our video crash course on how markets in Great Britain and ERCOT work, or head to modoenergy.com to see our written research. Thanks for listening.